My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. I greatly enjoy hearing from you, the listener. Today's guest on Hemp Present is Dean Becker. Dean is a former cop, and over the last 20 plus years, he has invested more than 40,000 hours reporting from scores of conferences and seminars around the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Bolivia, Portugal, and Switzerland. Becker has consulted with more than 3,000 drug policy experts, to include National Institute for Drug Abuse scientists, doctors, and researchers. He has consulted with sitting judges, district attorneys, police chiefs, and sheriffs, as well as many high echelon officials, including then President of Mexico, Vicente Fox, Portugal's drug czar, Galeo, and Dr. Berkey, the designer of Switzerland's heroin program. As the Reverend Most High of Evident Truth, Becker claims the moral high ground in the drug war and challenges the world to prove him wrong. But he will have to look elsewhere for that challenge today, because here on Hemp Present, we are in total alignment. So let's bring Dean on so we can deliver some preaching to this choir. Welcome, Dean, to Cannabis Radio.
Oh, Viv, thank you for this opportunity. As you know, I'm always ready to preach to the choir, teaching them how to sing solos.
Oh, man, you're the man, bro. Now, I have to continue your intro here. You serve as Speaker for the Law Enforcement Action Partnership. You are a board member of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, the National African American Forum, as well as End Mass Incarceration Houston. You're a partner with the Drug Policy Alliance and served as a liaison for the New York Times Drug Policy Forum. And your first book, To End the War on Drugs, was released in 2014 and is available on Amazon and Kindle. But you have not always been such a staunch opponent of America's drug policy. You used to enforce drug policy as a law enforcement officer. What happened?
Well, that was a grand mistake by the U.S. government. The law enforcement work I did was after going in the U.S. Air Force. They determined that I needed to guard nuclear weapons. So they gave me a high security clearance, thought I was intelligent enough, and made me a cop out there on the bomb dump or guarding B-52s full of hydrogen bombs. Never busted anybody for drugs. So,
okay.
I wore the badge, pinned on that badge, swore to uphold the Constitution, and I'm still trying to uphold the Constitution. That's what I'm still up to as an expert, if you will. 3,000 interviews, as you say, everybody from the coroner of Vancouver to, as you mentioned, the drug czar of Portugal, my friend, Dr. João Goulart.
And you pronounced his name a lot better than I did, which I anticipated. So let me get this straight. So you have always opposed America's drug policies, or did you have an evolution at some point?
Well, the years that I was in the Air Force, now picture this, I joined in 1967.
Well, there's a lot of drug use there. There was some drug use in the military back then.
Yeah, and it was just starting. But as it turned out, 6 months into my enlistment, everybody in my barracks, all the security policemen, were smoking weed. I mean, I say 80% were. And I guess the point is, even then, we knew that it was a harmless thing that did not disrupt our behavior, that did not, as that poor young lady who ran the 100-yard dash learned, it's not an enhancement of any kind. It's just a little recreational drug you take when you're, in need of a pick-me-up or a little relaxation. And, what was it? 2 weeks ago, they declared a 50-year anniversary of Nixon's war on drugs. Well, I got busted in the Air Force for 0.023 grams of marijuana. Now, you take 50 times that much, you could probably roll it.
What's that, a seed?
Well, I thought the matchbox was empty. I'll just put it that way. But it was, I don't know, that bust, that was the very first bust of, for me. It began a re-examination for me. It began the process of leading me to become the Reverend Most High, trying to expose the evident truth. The drug war is a fiasco, a fraud, never had any reason to exist. And at this point in time, there's not one person on this planet wants to come on my radio show and defend the drug war, from the drug czar to the DEA to anybody in the ONDCP, FBI, CIA, I don't care, the U.S. Attorney General. None of them can defend this policy. It is fractured. It is a fiasco. And if it wasn't so stupid, it would be, worth laughing at.
So you've been a true believer for a long time as far as reforming America's failed drug policy.
Yes, I have.
So, Dean, you have attended, as I mentioned, numerous drug policy symposiums, conferences around the U.S. You report for the Drug Truth Network, which you call, quote, a media production organization dedicated to exposing the fraud, misdirection, and wastefulness of the war on drugs. You're based at KPFT, I believe, Houston's Pacifica radio station, broadcasting to more than 90 affiliate stations in the U.S. and Canada. As previously mentioned, you have not always been a media personality. How and when did you see independent media as a tool? When did you start seeing independent media as a tool by which to expose and fight the injustice of America's drug policy?
I think I was 49 years old, so we're looking back 23 years ago, approximate. Wanted to do something. Wanted to make a difference in this world. Wanted to make a splash. I raised four boys. I've got eight grandkids. I had a pretty good life, despite going to jail 13 times for minor amounts of drug. That white privilege helped me out too, by the way. I'm just going to have to admit it or say it. Had I been black or Mexican, I probably would still be in prison, considering all the times I got caught. But coming back to it, I wanted to do something in this life, wanted to contribute, wanted to be an example for my kids. And I figured out, first off, the New York Times Drug Policy Forum was one of the first to begin openly discussing the policy of drug reform, where the word legalized could actually be read in an American newspaper. And I eventually became the liaison there because I was the first person who actually put my name down. Everybody else had nom de plume, Jack Rabbit or who, nobody's name was on that site until I got there.
Right.
And I, through that openness, through that, and I'll say it now, courage, the New York Times asked me to be the liaison. With that authority, I then invited folks like Milton Friedman, the Nobel laureate economist who came out strongly in support of ending prohibition, then Governor Gary Johnson, and some other big names, Ethan Nadelman, I got him to come on there, and they would answer questions of the attendees to the forum. And I've got a big binder still full of that. But with that information I gained in about 2 years working with the New York Times, Pacifica Radio was having another revolution. They were kicking out the old guard and bringing in a new team, so to speak. And I went to the local meeting here in Houston, told them, hey, I've been working on exposing the fraud and misdirection of the drug war. I'd love to have a show. The manager and the program director, we'll think about it. But listening on the side was Houston's famed activist, Ray Hill, great gay rights activist, busy in Washington and around the country, Supreme Court rulings. He heard me. He says, Dean, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a segment on my show every Friday night, and they're still doing it. It's called The Prison Show. 2 hours where first hour they talk general stuff. The second hour, families of those who have prisoners behind bars in Texas get to call in, and their families get to hear them behind bars through that radio program, The Prison Show. But Ray gave me a 5-minute segment in the middle of that. Before I knew it, other programmers there at KPFT were saying, hey, let me give you a segment on my show. So I was doing a segment on the Labor Show, a Reach Out in the Darkness music show, the Queer Show, and the Prison Show. So eventually said, well, maybe we should just give this guy his own hour, which they did. And eventually that's grown over the years. We now divide that into 2 half hours, my Cultural Baggage Show and the Century of Lies Show, which is now being produced by our good friend, Mr. Doug McVeigh up there in Portland. I hope I answered your question.
You have. Doug has been on this show. We got about 2 minutes till the first break. You mentioned it. It's been 50 years since President Nixon declared the war on drugs. Last year, President Trump pardoned multiple prisoners, some serving life for cannabis and other drug offenses. President Biden has kind of sent mixed signals about his positions on drug policy, but a lot of states have legalized retail sales of cannabis, while nationally arrests have just started to decrease cannabis arrests. thousands are still languishing in jails and prisons. What's your assessment of where we're at today? Do you feel we're making progress? You know, you and I have been talking against the drug war for decades, but it's starting to catch on in media. Is it all just window dressing for the perpetuation of the same old drug war paradigm? Or are you hopeful?
It's
a tough question, I know.
I'm really leery of drug reform in general. We have owned the moral high ground in this for as long as we have existed, for as long as we have known the truth, that this was a fabrication, a racial screed put forward 50 and 100 years ago, designed to empower whites and diminish blacks and other colored organizations, other colored people. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that there is no legitimacy to it, never was. And what we have to do is quit bowing to their logic, to their, you know, that, oh my God, something bad may happen. That's been the whole premise of the drug war, that something bad may happen. And from the time they started it 100 years ago, trying to stop snake oil salesmen, well, it's definitely got worse. We now have millions of snake oil salesmen, and yet they continue to. I was talking yesterday to a Houston Chronicle reporter. He's going to be on my next show about the fact that they may get it that the drug war is not quite right, but they still tout the fact that every bust is a wonderful thing for the community and that somehow it's going to be a better day because of that bust or that, you know, diminishing of one person's ability to sell drugs. The drug war is the world's largest multi-level marketing organization that has ever existed on this planet. It entices our children to lives of crime and addiction. Take $5, buy a bag of weed, sell it for 10, go buy more, prosper. It is a means to, I don't know. It's a self-perpetuating fiasco.
Well, you know, I think that's a great place to leave it. We have to roach this segment, a very fat segment rolled up for after this break. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoggies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
We're back with Dean Becker from the Drug Truth Network and Century of Lies. Dean, on the first segment, you kind of touched on how the drug war has just been a, you know, racially targeted injustice all along. We cannot have a conversation about Black Lives Matter without talking about the war on drugs. How central do you think U.S. drug policy has been in creating the atmosphere where police can just summarily execute men of color in what would normally be a routine police encounter for a white person? Some would argue that targeting racial minorities was the whole point all along.
It was the whole point all along. We can reach back to a gentleman named Harry J. Anslinger, who proves it quite well. The documentation is all over the internet. It's in books. It's screaming. Racial prejudice. That's where they started. It wasn't just against blacks, it's against Mexicans. You give one of these Mexican beat workers a puff off a marijuana cigarette, the next thing you know, he thinks he's been elected president of Mexico and he sets out to kill his enemies. That's the kind of BS that was circulated in the 1920s and 30s as they were ratcheting up this jihad against cannabis. People had cannabis in their medicine cabinets. They used it. They appreciated it. They knew it was good medicine. They didn't know what this strange marijuana was that Harry J. Anslinger was talking about. And he started this whole shooting match by demonizing Mexicans and the Spanish language, for that sake. And I guess it boils down to we were fooled, been fooled all along. There's just no reason, no rationale. It's a frightening it's a means to frighten and fleece the public. That's what the drug war is about. It has never protected anybody, not even one child. It's never stopped any person from getting their hands on their drug of choice if they're determined enough.
Dean, the DEA operates on a budget of over $3 billion with more billions allocated for incarceration and military drug enforcement. Still, 2020 was the worst year in history for overdose deaths. What's going on? How do you explain this country's catastrophic opioid epidemic in the face of a supposed war on drugs?
A huge, massive failure by our elected officials, mm-hmm. by our administrators, if you will, who refuse to see this.
It's not really a war on drugs, right?
Yeah, yeah. I opened my cultural baggage with a show that, you know, we're trying to stop those who fleece the public, you know, the prison industrial complex, you know, the et cetera, the urine testers,
it's all a racket.
It goes on and on. There are millions of people who profit from this drug war, and each one of them swears on a Bible that they're doing God's work and that it's the best thing going, but that's how they make their mortgage payment. I think many things have begun to show. I'm going to be careful here how I say this. That religion has lost a lot of respect because there are so many people within religion that are just messing up badly. And the drug war is a religion of its own. It's a quasi-religion. It's a belief system. It's handed down from grandpa to daddy to grandson. It's taught as if it had merit. The teachings and the preachings of Harry J. Anslinger are handed down still. They are part of the reefer madness that continues to make it possible for that young lady to be denied her attempt on the Olympic team, for parents to have their children taken away because they're in a state where their metabolic system in their bloodstream means the police can take their children because they have smoked marijuana in the past, despite the fact that it's no threat to that child or never was. I'm sorry, Viv, I just get to preaching.
Well, you are the Reverend Most High of this evident truth, my friend. You and I have both been activists fighting in the trenches for decades for massive structural change to America's drug policies. When we began, there was very little money in our movement to fund reform efforts, yet thousands of community activists fought for change. Many were extremely successful. Some gave their lives working for the change that they never lived to see. Today, despite millions of dollars being generated from state legal cannabis sales, funding for drug reform efforts has pretty much evaporated. It's just dried up. Yet there's more money. For the first time, there's actually money being generated that could go to these reform efforts. What's the deal?
You nailed it. The fact of the matter is, the cartels, the gangs, the cops, the treatment providers, all of these folks want prohibition to continue. And now we have the marijuana growers, dispensers, who may not be blatant or open or obvious, but they kind of like it the way it is.
It's about keeping the gravy train running, right?
Yeah, because look, I predict, you know, long after I'm dead, maybe 50 years from now, you're going to be able to go in your Kroger store and you're going to be able to buy a pound of weed. It's not going to be trimmed. It's going to be buds and leaves sitting on branches all wrapped up in plastic and sold at about $50 a pound. And that's good bud. That's outdoor grown, maybe 15% THC. The better, higher quality stuff, well, who knows what it'll go for? I have no idea. But it is possible to grow good weed and price it under $50 a pound. And that's where we will eventually go. But in the meantime, these dispensary cartels or whatever, there's a lot of them owned by millionaires. They're building a network around the country. Moving.
It's the same old rich white guys capitalizing off of cannabis now, right?
Exactly. And on the reefer madness, they don't want that reefer madness to go away because the reefer madness is a tool. It's a point of leverage for every aspect of drug war. It gives reason for people to, quote, be afraid.
So you know, it's all a racket by which to fleece Americans and keep the gravy train running so that a small amount of people could get richer and richer and have more control over our lives. Is that pretty much
that an accurate assessment? Yes, and look, Liv, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, to me, the opportunity to truly legalize weed would mean they'd want to do it in Texas, which means they would come to Texas with some money, which means they would come here with some clout, something besides the few, I'll be careful again, the few people who are trying to
call it out on my show, bro.
Huh?
You can call it out.
Well, okay, the leaders of the Texas Normal and the other Texans for Responsible Marijuana, they're beggars. They're pleading with these rock hard Republican legislators to come around do it for the veterans, do it for the sick, do it for the cancer people, and they won't do it for anything because they have that quote moral high ground. Their belief system has not been challenged. You know, I steered clear this year, partly because of COVID and partly because, well, let's see if they can do it one more time. Every 2 years in Texas, we get the chance. Next time I'm going to be down there with handouts and flyers and just the truth. And I'm going to try to get every newspaper and broadcaster in Texas to share that truth, that these guys are in support of terrorist cartels, gangs, overdose, deaths, disease. They don't give a rat's ass. They want the power and they want to pretend to their constituents that they're good guys, they're protecting the kids. When the truth be told, right now, the best place for kids to find marijuana in Texas is through contacts made at the high school. And to pretend otherwise is just, it's evil. It's just friggin' evil.
You know, we hear about the big lie, right, around presidential politics and stuff, but the original big lie is the drug war.
Yeah, it is. The drug war has given credence to the ability to twist and distort and change and manipulate things. It has given an example to politicians. Hell, what got going now that Biden lost the election, that Arizona's full of Chinese bamboo? I don't know what the hell is going on, but
our reality is unrecognizable to me, man. I mean, I feel like I'm on acid half the time, and it's been a long time. I got to manipulate us into another break, though. We're going to take another short break, come back with our final questions for the amazing Dean Becker, so don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
We are back for our final segment with Dean Becker, and I think my mouth will work for the rest of this segment. Dean, you're just such a ferocious mouthpiece for, to end this insane war on drugs. I want to know a couple of things. I want to know if there's anything that gives you hope these days, with everything so bleak. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel at the way things are going? And more importantly, how can people get a hold of your show? I don't usually promote my competition, man, but your show is so damn important. And you've got really just one of the most amazing cadres of power hitters in cannabis and drug reform media. How can people find your show and follow what you're doing?
Well, thank you for that, Viv. Yeah, I've got 9,000 radio segments available at Drug Truth drugtruth.net. Drug Truth Network, drugtruth.net. I do a half-hour show, Cultural Baggage, each week, and my friend Doug McVeigh now does A Century of Lies. As I reached the age of 70, I figured I'd hand off some of it. But anyway, I want to talk about quickly what you mentioned, the dispensaries, the cannabis industry. I saw an ad today wanting to entice me to attend an online seminar where I could learn how to get more money for my dispensary. It would cost me $450 through ARO to, ARC, is it? I don't know. Anyway, to learn how to get more money. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. It's a fleece every way you can, this drug war. Now, insofar as my shows, it does run the gamut. I have interviewed prisoners in the pen. I've interviewed many of the folks who have spent those years behind bars on our behalf, right? Like guys like Will Foster, Eddie Lepp, Richard. Well, Richard didn't spend time, but he sure got hassled over it. And I guess what I'm trying to say, folks, we own the moral high ground. You, me, Viv, we own it. We own every square inch of it. We should not be afraid to have that debate. And what irks me, what I wish for before I die, I want the head of the DEA on my show. I want the head of the ONDCP, the U.S. Attorney General. I want one of these bastards who claims the drug war to be so necessary to come on my show and clarify why there is that need. What is the benefit? What do we derive from this that even begins to offset the horror we inflict on ourselves and the whole world by continuing to believe in this process of eternal prohibition? Please go to my website, endprohibition.org. Also works. I've got video links, and I have a 1.5-hour video which features the Drug Czar of Portugal, the head of the Global Commission on Drugs, Beto O'Rourke, my district attorney, other legislators, Ethan Nadelman. There's 19 folks, high echelon folks, proclaiming this drug war to be a fiasco and that it's time to claim the moral high ground. We own it. Don't slow down. Don't do anything. Do not pass go. Own the moral high ground. Refuse to bow before these lying weasel bastards.
Dean Becker, you are a force to be reckoned against the farce of prohibition. Thank you so much for being on the show, my friend. You stay strong.
Thank you, Viv, and keep it up.
You can count on that. That concludes this installment of Hemp Presented on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you've got the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice, so find your voice, speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. Until then, my friends, stay strong and get involved in the struggle to end federal prohibition. Turn up the music, maestro, because I am out.
Marijuana!
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.